No such thing as a media ban. We don't have a media ban.
Ah, you do.
No, we don't.
A donkey eat and a donkey eat a pellet. There's nothing else to eat.
He was massive. Legs, ass, built. But I bust out laughing much.
Two brilliant games at the weekend. Obviously, the first one was brilliant performance by Waterford and then a brilliant comeback by Galway. And the second one, I think, Paul, was real championship stuff. It really felt like this was, you know, the crowd really got into it. I think the battle between Tony Kelly and O'Leary, Sean O'Leary, just encapsulated the whole kind of game. Jeez, they tore into each other. And yeah, it's not often you see Kelly after a point. Once he gave O'Leary a good shoulder after it, and the second time he gave him a kind of a smart Gaelic tap on the back and just up for it. And it's just great to see nothing kind of malicious in any of this from O'Leary or Kelly. It's just a right good old battle.
Yeah. And it was clear what O'Leary's job was to go out and they was to really stick. And he did, in fairness to him, you know, he was sticking to him really well. In the first 15 minutes, you know, Tony Kelly wasn't really dominating by any means compared to what we've seen with Tony Kelly. But it got fiery then, like you said, it got fiery. And there was a few incidents even in the first half, but I think particularly in the second half where, you know, Tony Kelly being Tony Kelly, regardless, sometimes when he does stuff, you can't stop him. But he turned around to O'Leary and kind of said, nearly like, what do you think of that? Do you know?
You don't see that much in hurling, because that's what I was tweeting about this. O'Leary must be dogging him off the ball. Like, I wouldn't even mean that in a bad way. Like, he's trying to stop Tony Kelly, but whatever he was doing, it was getting under Tony's skin. Now, whatever he was doing, he should have stopped it, because it just, like, it wound Tony up a little bit too.
And I'd say the majority of what he was doing was just mouthing at Tony Kelly. And again, I wouldn't say that in a malicious way. I'd say he was just telling him, you know, called for this ball or I had you there or whatever was. It didn't seem to be too malicious, because again, like, there's so many cameras on the pitch. If he was doing anything that was, you know, unsavoury or anything, it would have been picked up, but it wasn't. Like, you know, and it was great to see even the response of Tony Kelly. Like, you know, what else do we expect from him? That he just turned around, great points, and he seemed sharp and upward. It completely didn't put him off. Like you said, probably did the complete opposite, that you'd nearly be going into Tony Kelly being friendly to him if that's the response he
well,
gives.
Well, on that evidence, I don't think anyone's going to be doing it again. There's no doubt. What about the point he scored from the fresh air from Tim O'Matney? Like, it reminded me of the first tee box when loads of people are queuing up to tee off. There's a lot of pressure on that tee shot, and I've often done that. Like, I mean, did he actually touch the ball, or did the wind of the hurl missing it make it move?
I don't know. I don't think anyone could know what happens. Like, again, he was so close to the ball. Could have been the wind, but the ball moved.
Bottom line, the ball moved.
So it's hard for a referee to decide there what happened. But what was great about that was Tony Kelly just said, I'll play this ball, and if he blows it up, he blows it up. But if you saw the Cork players kind of hope that if we don't move, hopefully the referee will go, no, he didn't touch the ball. Whereas you'd be going to your players, look lads, play it, and if the referee blows it, and they got a simple point off the back of it. So Tony Kelly's attitude there to just go, right, I'm just going to play this ball, and if the referee brings it back, he brings it back. But if I get the point, as they did, whereas the Cork players kind of went, oh, hopefully now, and hope for the best. And they could have got to Tony Kelly, but they didn't.
Tim O'Matney didn't even go near him. Tim O'Matney stayed just giving out to the linesman.
Yeah, which was silly.
Like, I mean, how long are you told from underage you play the whistle and you wait and you don't just stop yourself expecting the whistle to go? Like, it's unusual to see them not even try.
No, not even try. And even after 1 or 2 seconds where you could see the referee was saying play on, I mean, give it, if you're going to give it 1 or 2 seconds, fine. But once you see Tony Kelly rising the ball, I mean, it's plain to see the referee isn't going to blow the whistle, chase him, try and hook him, but don't be giving out to the linesman and the referee, because again, what are they meant to do? The ball looked like it moved, so what can they do? Do you know? So if it's going to be played, like you said, play the whistle. Don't be playing expecting a simple kind of, okay, take the sideline again.
Are you going to give out to me here now when I say, how did Tony Kelly miss that last one?
Yeah,
that is bread and butter.
It is.
So couldn't that have been just the most unbelievable performance? That if he'd gotten that, he won the penalty himself. He drove them back into it. Like, some of the points were out of this world as usual.
Yeah.
Like, you know, how did he miss that? He was straight through and goal.
The way I looked at it was that only for his heroics in the rest of the game, that didn't matter. Like, that goal chance didn't matter. But yeah, right. But I think Tony Kelly, when I saw his response, what I was thinking at that time was that Tony is disappointed in, not that he didn't score, but that he didn't give it a chance, that he just struck it at Patrick
Straight
Collins. Because it was those ones that you give out to forwards, you know. Like, we played a match the weekend at the club and we had 2 goal chances and they struck him kind of body height at the keeper. And you're going, if you're to do anything, you know, go aim for your top corner if you're going to, or strike it into the ground, but don't strike it body height where if the keeper doesn't move, it just hits him. So I'd say Tony's response, and it looked like that's what his response was, of disappointment. Not that he didn't score, but the fact he just didn't give it a chance.
Yeah.
It wasn't an incredible save.
If he goes down there, it's a goal. If he goes for the floor.
That's it. If he goes down, or at least we saw the other goals, they're all struck high into the net, you know, even in the Waterford match as well. So you're kind of thinking, that's what Tony would have been disappointed about. He didn't give it a chance, which you're saying, if you're going to do anything, if a great save comes out of it from Patrick Collins, fine, but at least give it a chance. And I'd say that's what Tony was disappointed about. Again, though, I'd bring it back to only for his heroics in the match. Clare wouldn't have been in that position. Yeah. So I wouldn't be looking at it from, you know, what if. I mean, he scored some incredible stuff. It's just a pity that what appeared to be the easiest one was the one he left behind.
Yeah, yeah. It's hard to be critical, but, like, I mean, it's just so surprising. And that would have been some finish to the game. It really would. Absolutely incredible. But, like, I mean, he scored a brilliant penalty just before that, like, which he won himself. Camera was a bit away from it. Probably looked maybe slightly soft penalty. Would it have been?
Yeah, it could have been. I don't think there's many arguments with it either. You know, he won a great ball, turned, and it's a dangerous position for a defender to be in. Like, you nearly, to guarantee yourself not giving away a penalty, you nearly have to stand off him. But what do you do if you stand off him? You know? So yeah. I don't think there was much arguments with it. And as well, because there was no other players really around it.
It looked consolation too, so Cork weren't going to give out about it.
True,
you know?
Yeah. I mean, what, they were down by, was it 6 points at that stage they were down? So it looked kind of like a consolation. You weren't expecting, you know, Clare to come back into it at that stage. But at the same time, you know, he caught the ball, he turned, he was impeded a small bit and he hit the ground. So, I mean, I don't think there's much arguments with it either.
Right, okay. And it was a brilliant finish. I'm talking about hitting the ball into the ground. You don't want to do it like Seamus Harden and he did it. He just kind of smashed it into the ground, took all the speed off it and he just
it just popped up. Yeah, yeah.
You don't
often
see that, do you?
No. I think there was a small bit of a hook on that though.
Was there?
Yeah, I was looking at it because again, I remember the commentator did say at the time that, you know, he did all the hard work but then he just knocked it into the ground. But I think there was, the Clare defender just got a little bit of a flick into it.
Right.
And unfortunately for Seamus Harnedy, it looks like he scuffed the shot then, which he didn't.
What do you make of Cork coming out late onto the pitch, right? So it's a sweltering hot day.
Yeah.
And, you know, they missed the national anthem. So Kieran Kingston said afterwards, he said, our clocks must have been wrong because we thought we were 3 minutes early, and that's being honest. And we're trying to keep out of the sun for a while, and we were coming on as it was being played.
Yeah.
I wouldn't disbelieve Kieran Kingston. Like, I don't think he's a liar.
No.
But, like, I mean, staying out of the sun that long, would that have made it such a big deal?
I think this was a genuine mistake, yeah, because, like, again, we hurled a match with the club yesterday around 2 o'clock, and any chance I got to stand in the dugout when you're warming up and you just got this minute or two to take a bit of water, you know, the lads were piled into the dugout in a bit of shade because it was sapping and you'd be quite conscious of it. And I'd understand, you know, especially players are nervous and, you know, they've travelled up on a bus and you're trying to make sure every little bit you can to give them a small bit of an edge. And I think being out in the sun a small bit, because it was exceptional over the weekend, the sun was, you know, a big factor. So I do believe that, you know, there was part of the plan that they would stay in out of the sun, get as much out of it as they can, keep lads hydrated, and just miscalculated. I mean, they're in and out off the pitch. Lads, players get out, have a look at the pitch, come back in, maybe have a puck around, go out then, togged out, have another look. And I'd say they just misjudged it a small bit was all. So, and like you said, I wouldn't doubt Kieran Kingston. I think it was a genuine mistake. And sure, again, where did they set their watch off? Is it just they're off by 3 minutes, and sure, 3 minutes just meant they came out a small bit later.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't doubt them.
I wouldn't say teams need a warm up at all. Would you have done a warm up yesterday, for example? A warm up is nearly counterproductive in that heat, isn't
it? Yeah, you do a shortened
bit
one.
Of stretching,
I think
anyone
with a bit of tact would. You know, I saw Kilkenny even in the Leinster final. You know, you could see they did a revised warm up, a shorter, briefer one, because again, it's not a case that you're physically getting the body warm. It's just you're loosening out and trying to get the ball into hand. And it's not the traditional thing when people think of a warm up. You're heating the body up. You don't need to heat
the body
up.
Yeah.
It's just getting hamstrings going, getting blood to the legs, making sure that lads don't suddenly run out. Because you see, like the way Waterford started, if you didn't do a warm up and you took off after Caelum Lyons or whoever, hamstrings are gone straight away. So it's just getting the blood going. I think teams did a more revised warm up, shortened one, condensed, getting the ball into hand. And I think really a lot of it would be getting the nerves out of players, getting them pucking a few balls and getting them a bit of a run on the pitch. But I don't think there was huge warm ups done over the weekend.
No, it would be more kind of getting the eye in and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And the little bit of running that goes along with whatever drills you do with that is enough.
Absolutely,
and a bit of stretching. What do you make of the Conor Gleeson red card?
Yeah, it was a red card as far as I can see. Yeah, I do think so, because it's, well, by today's standards, you know, as in it was a silly slap back. And, you know, there was
minimal though, wasn't it?
It was
it's
minimal.
Almost playful now. Stop that! And
you're
trying to block my run.
It was, but you're playing with fire. That's the thing. You know, I don't think there was a huge amount of malice in it. I don't think he meant to injure Joe Canning. If Joe Canning stays standing, I say, you know, he's probably not going to get sent off. The umpire mightn't have seen it. I don't think Joe Canning went down soft though either. Like, you know, he catch someone on the hand there with a hurl, with a slap. You could break a finger, you could break a bone.
Could you? But with the force, now they say, like, cause I don't know how sore that might be. For me, it just looked like a very, very innocuous flick. I think Joe set. My opinion on that is Joe set him up. He tried to block him. He got he pissed him off.
Yeah.
And he got a flick and he went down. And he set him right up.
I know what Joe was doing. And I'd often see forwards have done it to me and I've done it to forwards where they want to make the run. Like, let's say the Galway player went to make the run. So Conor Gleeson ran after him. And Joe, being a good forward, was going out there just And Joe just put the hurl out. Joe didn't swing the hurl. He just put the hurl out. But Conor Gleeson, like, he should have just let his momentum take it through. He shouldn't give him the option of if Joe swung back, or sorry, if Conor Gleeson swung back, an umpire seen it, a referee seen it. You know, there was no benefit to doing it, but he still did it and he paid the price. Again, I'd understand if someone said, no, it's not a sending off. You know, I'd understand that. A yellow card, I think a yellow card would have been fair.
I think it would have.
And people wouldn't have argued. But at the same time, when you saw it, we were arguing about Aaron Gillan last weekend as well. That was a stronger flick back.
There was much more force in that.
There was a lot more force, but it was of the same style. He swung back at him, you know. And so where do we draw the line then? Where do we draw a line with, oh no, that was actually a strong strike? If you're swinging back at a player, you're playing with fire.
Yeah.
You know, so that was, it was just unfortunate for Conor Gleeson. That's what it was. If he got a yellow card, I don't think even people would have argued with that either. But he put the referee in an awkward position. And again, if you do that, you're risking getting sent off. So a red card, given the fact that it was needless to do it, I kind of say, look, it's fair enough that he got sent off.
Right, okay. Sometimes you see with this kind of thing that players there comes a point on a pitch if somebody's trying to mess with you, and Canning could have done that another couple of times to him.
Yeah.
And at what point does Gleeson say, here now, you know, sometimes you have to put manners on a lad, and there's no other way of doing that if you're not going, you know, than give the flick. I don't know, on a hurling pitch or like, you know, I'm sure there's loads of times that you've given or maybe received a little butt in a cup, you know. And maybe go, you won't be doing that to me again.
But there's other ways
of sending off.
There's cleverer ways of doing it though. Like, I mean, if you were running across there, Joe Canning is in the good position of, if he puts the hurl out, he's not seen to be doing a whole lot, and he wants Conor Gleeson to react. I'd always be saying to lads, what does he want you to do in this situation?
React.
He wants Conor Gleeson to react. What I'd often say to lads would be, well, not often say it to lads, but if lads were saying, you know, a fella's getting me nerves, wait till it's not as obvious. Like, you know, where you can, like, let's say there's high ball coming in and maybe step on his calves a small bit there, step on his heels and, you know, remind him there. But don't swing back at him. Don't do in the moment what he wants you to do.
Yeah.
Or, you know, if you're going in and there's a chance where you can go in on a hard tackle and hit him a dunt, and say it to him then if that's what you want to do, if that's what the plan is. But don't do in the moment what he wants you to do. If Joe's plan was to get a reaction out of him, which I don't think it was either, he got the reaction. And so I'd be saying, look, while umpires are looking and referees are looking, and this isn't to be sounding dirty behind the ball, but if a player is niggling at you and he wants you to react, don't react. But play hard for the next ball and
get your
little dunt in, and if that's what you want to do, but don't in the moment do what he wants you to do.
No, I get you. Gleeson missed the All-Ireland final sure against Galway because of a pull, wasn't it, against Cork? It was a silly thing that he did that time.
I remember at the time, like, again, sure, he got the straight red, so he's banned, which was unfortunate for Conor Gleeson again, but look, again, he'll learn from it. He's not a dirty player. He's a good physical player. It's just unfortunate for him. Now, look, thankfully, because Waterford went on to win the match, you know, he'll be able to park this and move on and go, okay, no, he's going to miss the next match with a straight red.
Yeah.
But at least he's able to go, look, I didn't cost my team anything here today. And really, Galway should have capitalised on that. But he should be looking at that going forward. And I know he will, because he's a solid fella. He'll look at it and go, look, that's two red cards now where I've missed possibly important matches for my team. You know, I need to realise that if a lad is getting my back, I can't let the team suffer by me getting sent off.
Just like you say,
do it
at a quieter time. There's cameras and everyone. There was a bit of a row then in that game. It started kicking off a little bit then, and that's what Galway probably wanted. Waterford shouldn't have got sucked into it. I think it was Gleeson and Conor Cooney wrestling on the ground, and then Shane Cooney got a yellow card after that. But then Galway got that Gleeson inspirational point straight after all that row, and you go, Jesus, you know,
a big moment. And like you said, Waterford, Galway probably wanted that. Galway were looking for a way to get into the game, and they were lacking that edge that Waterford seemed to have. So sometimes, you know, teams will do it where they go in and try and start a fight.
Get stuck
because you have to pull players into the match, you know. And in fairness, you know, closer to the end, it was a bit too late in the match, but Galway got that reaction they were looking for, found that little bit of a spark. But like you said, they were looking for it at that time, and unfortunately, sure, Austin Gleeson kind of scuffed the sideline and came back to him, and he got an inspirational point. Like, so it unfortunately backfired a little bit on Galway, but
it upped the temperature then.
It did up it, and you know, they were starting to come into it then, and you know, you saw, okay, Shane Cooney, but at least he was playing with a bit of fire then as well, like, you know. So it unfortunately backfired on him, but you could see what Galway were trying to do. They were trying to pull themselves into the match. match.
Yeah, that was a yellow as well. I don't think anyone would say that was a red. It was just the two of them were kind of pulling around at each other or whatever like that. So Joe Canning beat Henry's record anyways. Like, that was always going to happen.
Yeah.
Patrick Horgan joined a 500-point barrier. And incredibly, Patrick Horgan is the highest points from play in the championship history.
Yeah.
And I think, right, Joe Canning, Henry Shefflin Grant, they should have a free-taking competition. Patrick Horgan should be the top point scorer, because how can a player that doesn't take frees compete for a top scorer with a player that takes frees? Do you get me?
I mean,
it's not fair. Joe and Henry have that added advantage. Patrick Horgan is the top scorer from play.
Yeah.
Now, he's obviously on the frees as well, but do you get my point?
Yeah,
there should be
mean,
two
yeah.
separate, I think categories, at the end of every year, there should be two separate categories, no?
Well, it just, I know what you mean, but look, there's no award really going for it. At the end of the day, it's just people's perspective, what you think is a better achievement, really. I mean, people are always, look at who's the top scorer and who has the most All-Irelands or who's the most All-Stars. They want to know who is the most of whatever. But what I think is a significant one for Patrick Horgan is from play is a huge achievement.
Yeah.
That's the sign of a player who consistently has been performing. Not to say obviously Henry and Joe haven't been, but it's a great testament to Patrick Horgan, because there's some years there where, you know, Cork have been knocked out of the championship in quarterfinals, and earlier probably more often than Joe Canning and Henry Shefflin were knocked out of championships. So for him to be in the position now that he's from play the top scorer, that's an enormous achievement.
Yeah.
And even the point he got the weekend, I mean, it was incredible, a point off his knees. And you know, he's a player that consistently plays for Cork, and every so often he kind of reminds us that, you know, how great he is. Like, he's consistently set a standard for himself. Like TJ and Joe and these lads, their standards are so high that, you know, we nearly forget sometimes how good they are. But that itself, yeah, it's a standalone, it's a brilliant achievement that from play, that's he's the top scorer. It just shows, and I've marked him many times, he's just a player who gets on with playing. He's not a player who starts mounting at you.
No, he'd be a gentleman.
Considering for a Cork fella, like, you know, usually Cork lads to talk. But no, Patrick Horgan comes in, just goes about his business. Great balance about how he plays. You know, he just has great mindset. And he's very selfless as well with the ball. You know, he does give off balls to a lot of players. So it is a great achievement. And again, probably, you know, he was probably in the shadows of Joe. A lot of tension was on Joe at the weekend, passing out Henry. But, you know, I think a lot of credit has to be given to Patrick Horgan for surpassing that at the weekend. It's a great achievement.
The one off his knees was the good one. Brian Corcoran, the famous one against Kilkenny, where he went off the knees. And the young Leash under 20, James Duggan, the other day, where he went down with cramp and then he got one off the knees. That was a very impressive one as well. Like, I mean, they're great scores to watch. Just on Joe and Patrick Horgan, is there evidence to suggest that they're on the wane, though? Like, I mean, you know, in the championship this year, Joe and Patrick haven't been the same threat.
Yeah,
like, you know, it doesn't, they look like Joe's 33 this year, you know?
Yeah,
so, like,
yeah.
I mean, you know, I'm not saying that they're not very important players still, but like when you see Tony Kelly, they've gone way off that kind of level, though.
Yes, it's reasonable to believe that that is the case. And you have to consider, you know, Joe is 33, he's on the road a long time as well, like, and he's had serious injuries over the years. You know, he's torn the hamstring off the bone and he's done savage injuries. So to expect him to be sprinting around, and especially again, you know, 33 this year. Again, the game has changed. You know, he was on a pitch and he was looking at Caelum Lyons running past him, Jack Prendergast, these lads who are possibly 11 or 12 stone skipping around the pitch, you know, and Joe is a big physical player. Joe would have had to play in generations there, let's say in the early, 2010 onwards. You know, he would have marked Dermot O'Sullivan and these players. Well, just before that, remember the games?
But now
he's competing with players he's marking who are 11 and 12 stone skipping around at midfield, and he's had to adjust his game for that as well. So it's reasonable that a man is 33 years of age. Maybe again, we could be looking at it because he's not performing well. We look at his age and we say maybe that's the case, but he's still performing really well. And the thing with Joe is that it was never a case that he relied on his physicality. Of course, he was always a very fast player. But his hurling, we saw the goal the Jason Flynn goal. It's his brain that will get him a bye. And Joe could play for a few more years if he wants to.
Probably
because
at 14.
Because he's the cleverness, you know, because that's the thing in at 14 or, you know, whatever way he wants to play it, whatever way they want to use him, but get him at the edge of the box because he has the hands, he has the touches and he'll create something, you know. So, yeah, look, it's reasonable. He's 13 or he's 33. He's had a lot of injuries. And look, maybe an off day, sometimes we might focus a small bit on his age a bit more. He could still be perfectly fine for all we know, you know.
Yeah, no, exactly. So Leash stayed up. You just saw a package on this last night and then they moved on to preview next week instead of even mentioning anything about it. You know, these kind of things get my back up. But look, it was only a league relegation. It wasn't championship. I'll accept all that. That's fine. But like, I mean, I was watching this. It was in a pub, so you're not watching it to the same kind of level that you would when you're at home.
Yeah.
But like, I mean, you know, took a long time to get this rally going. You're expecting, right, the man down. I thought the sending off was very harsh, was it? That didn't look like a stamp to me. I thought it was
harsh. On Craig there for Westmead, it was I thought it was harsh, to be honest. Like, he kind of stepped over him.
Yeah,
like,
you know, and clipped him on the way over.
And maybe he did clip him, yeah, exactly. And he could have stood on him, but was it intentional? I don't think he's not that type of player.
I think it might have grazed him, and Chad did a bit of a jump, kind of like he got hurt, which that was nothing. He might have got
that
hurt.
Was nothing, yeah.
It didn't look like a stamp though, did it?
No, it wasn't a stamp. It certainly was. Like, he might have stepped on him, but like, that'll happen. They were fighting for a ball on the ground, and you know, he just stepped over him, and he didn't look like he went to stamp on him, and he just walked off. And I remember he kind of looked back to see, he heard a whistle blown, kind of what's going on here. It wasn't a red card, and it was very harsh, and they can feel hard done by. He's not that kind of player, and I don't think, you know, the Leash player wasn't even playing for it either. So it was it's tough on Westmead that happened.
Yeah, I think the ref tried maybe compensate for that. Then he gave a terribly soft penalty to Westmead, which they missed. Yeah. But Jesus, that's not a penalty.
No, it wasn't a penalty.
They're actually
either.
Trying their best not to foul him.
No, and fairness, look, Davy Lynn's a nice fella as I got flashbacks of 2012 All-Ireland final. I said, geez, Davy Lynn, and he gave nightmares over that. But no, he gave a soft penalty, and like you said, it was justified. I think myself that it was justified that it went over the bar, you know, because what were the Leash players meant to do? They were standing up, they weren't surrounding him, they didn't jump in on him, and David Lennon went down once he was in the box. Not saying David Lennon was diving. I'd be hoping my forward would do the same if the match was in the jaws like that. But the Leash players, I can feel hard done by as well there. So look, again, maybe he went to try and balance out the thing, but I was happy that it went over the bar in terms of the balance of the match. I don't think Leash deserved it to go into the goal.
Yeah, interesting from a Leash point of view. You look back at the last three games and you say a very, very positive, you know, beat Antrim, almost beat Waterford, which is an incredible performance, and then beat Westmead. Then you look back at the year in total, and they achieved, which is the bare minimum which they would have set out to, is to stay in the Joe McDonagh, stay in Division One. You know, how will they look back on that year? I know Cheddar always talks about new management team, the whole restrictions, you know, they changed their game plan and it turned around better for them. So, you know, how did they look into next year? Like, what's a realistic target, do you think, for the likes of Leash?
Yeah, they started very slowly into the league, and it's funny, you know, we're finishing kind of on a positive for Leash, because they did, you know, considering the way they played the league, they would be happy with these results, because they picked it up, and it's not an easy thing to do. You know, the easiest thing to do in the world is just let the season drift off, and, you know, but they did put in the effort, and they hurled quite well, put up a great effort against Waterford as well. But it's funny how from the start of the league to where we are now, you know, Clare started off very poor. They were bet by Antrim, and we were sitting here talking about, oh, Clare. Whereas at the moment, you know, Clare were one of the most exciting teams, and they had a very good year, even considering the COVID cases, and you know, against Tipperary, they would have felt hard done by. I think Leash would be the same. Leash would have felt, you know, they didn't start quick enough into the league, and they left themselves with a lot of work to do. But in fairness, when that work came around, you know, they knuckled down and they got results. But I don't think it should be tinged with. They have to be realistic, you know. They can't keep doing that. If you keep playing with fire like that, they are going to drift down, and it's not a place they want to go. While they're up there, stay up there, stay competing. It's a lot more hard work if you drift down to come back up to where you are instead of just maintaining it. So there is positives to take from Leash, but all in all, considering the last few years they have, they won't be saying it's a step back for them. It is a step back, you know, but they do have a lot of good players there. They have a lot of work they can do, and there's a lot of positives to take, but it's kind of it's a mismatch of a year for them. But I think they'll be happy enough that they finished on a positive note, doing the best they could, really, and putting in a good performance against Waterford.
Yeah, and they have obviously got a full year now, maybe with less restrictions and less interruptions to work on whatever they need to do. And, you know, hopefully, I don't know, a couple of league wins maybe, and not be in any relegation matches, I suppose, next year.
Keeping yourself out of relegation. Anything that does that consistently and keeps themselves out of relegation, you know, that's you'd only be dicing with relegation. I know you'd experience it with the club, and, you know, you don't want to put yourself in that position where you're playing with relegation, and then you're waiting to get the response from a team to try and dig yourself out of it, and then you kind of have this little bit of a celebration that, yeah, we did ourselves, but you're there going, don't put yourself in that position. You're a good enough team not to put yourself in that position.
Yeah, exactly. All right, we'll leave it there and we'll come back and look at the two matches. All right, we'll start with the Waterford Galway game, 130 to 320. I mean, you know, it's hard to know Waterford were by far the better team here,
yeah.
and they almost got caught. Like, is yeah. it's almost like the All-Ireland final with Limerick and Galway, where that comeback came just a little bit too late. But if there was another 5 minutes in that game, Waterford would have been under pressure, even though they responded very well to both Flynn goals.
Yeah, they did. And Galway were flat for an enormous amount of the game. They just didn't seem to know what they wanted to do. And even when Conor Gleeson was sent off, you know, there was no response really from Galway. They didn't know what they wanted to do with the extra man. And as well, even at that, you know, Waterford, they took off at an enormous pace, had serious fire. But then, you know, after 20 minutes or right up to the water break, I think it was, you know, it was level pegging just about, or there might have been just a point in it. So for all the hurling that Waterford had done, there still was very little in it. So there was a perfect time for Galway to go in at the water break, come out and say, listen, lads, we haven't hurled at all here. And we're still, it's a draw match. But then afterwards, when Waterford came out, I mean, they blitzed them. They hit them for 6 points on the trot. The Jack Fagan goal then. And they created such a gap that you were saying there's no way. And now I'm beginning to think that there is no lead safe in hurling anymore. Maybe it goes back to the small ball, or what people are saying, the lighter ball. But in fairness to Galway, they came back. And it just shows that once Galway got a bit of fire into them and they started going at Waterford, suddenly they started to peg back the lead, and the two Jason Flynn goals then really pegged it back. And we're kind of looking at ourselves going, if you did this 10 minutes, even 10 minutes earlier, where would the game have been, you know? But at the big times in the match, you know, Stephen Bennett stepped up. Austin Gleeson, who was very quiet at the start of the game, even, you know, he went for goal when he soloed through, could have popped the ball off to Jack Fagan, made a few bad decisions. But what was great was when they needed him, he stepped up and got a few great scores. Great sideline cut as well. When they got the 6 points on the hop, he got a great sideline as well. So Waterford, in fairness to them, even when Galway came back into it and they were man down, they still got the important scores when they needed it, which is a great sign for them. But Waterford were absolutely electric, and it was great to see them.
They were electric in that first half because it was 7-all, and then Waterford took off. It was like Kieran Bennett and Stephen Bennett came into it, and Caelum Lyons came forward, and Jamie Barron came into it, and it's like, Jesus, they just looked like they were younger, fitter, stronger, and, you know, way more up for it than Galway. Well, they were pretty much straight through the whole first half. Yeah, it's just they started getting, maybe not fouling as much. Galway were hanging in there just with fouls, but Waterford playing all the hurling.
They were playing all the hurling, and something they've really zeroed in on is this support play off the shoulder. You know, there was balls coming out, and Jamie Barron would get a ball, and there was a play there in the first half where I think it was Desi Hutchinson came out and got the hook on the Galway player, and we saw it where I think it was maybe, you know, it could have been Patrick Kerner or Jamie Barron got the ball, and he saw he was coming into a tackle with a Galway lad, so he popped it off the shoulder without looking. He probably heard the call, but he had the runners off the shoulder, and then the next Waterford player, Jack Fagan or whoever it was, got the ball, and there was another pop off the shoulder. I think it was Caelum Lyons ended up with a point.
It was Hutchinson then to Caelum Lyons.
Yeah, but there was just, I was watching back, and there was just players doing looping runs, and they always seemed to have that. As soon as they got the ball, the player who initially won it was looking, who am I popping it to? And they just had runners off the shoulder. So, like, that was hard to deal with. But I think a huge part of the Waterford game was their close touch. I mean, their first touch, the ball that was bouncing around, they were incredible getting the ball into their hand. And Desi Hutchinson deserves serious credit. There was balls going in where he was 1-on-3 at times with Galway defenders, but he was making the ball stick, which was brilliant. And I'd be saying it to players, you know, if my own club players or whoever, just make the ball stick in there now. Because what we're seeing is corner forwards traditionally were the players, you'd get the ball into him, get it into him low, win the ball over the bar. But now what we're seeing is it's nearly a case of getting the ball in, corner forwards are winning it, and it's the runners coming through are getting the scores, popping it off.
Yeah.
But Desi Hutchinson won that ball so many times, got it, and was running out the field, coming back out looking for his players.
To meet him coming in.
And he had him so many times, he had the runners off the shoulder. So Waterford, from that point of view, I thought it was, you know, great admiration for him and what they were doing. But their first touch was just brilliant. And I think it got him out of a lot of trouble as well, because the fact that they're making that first touch stick, it was allowing them to, you know, they weren't dealing with scuffles on the ground. They weren't dealing with the physically bigger Galway team. They were getting the ball, popping it out, and they were gone. So Galway couldn't nail them down, couldn't hit them. Garrod McInerney, Dahi Burke, they couldn't physically impose themselves on them. So I thought Waterford were excellent in that way.
The Desi Hutchinson in on his own one is an interesting one, because Patrick Curran came out. We never really would have seen that. Well, all this year he's been coming on as a sub and maybe floating in and around. Everybody's kind of coming out the field. Shane Bennett's back in the halfback tackle and Caelan Lyons, two fellas who are practically forwards.
Yeah.
And they're all runners from the middle. Yeah. And Hutchinson's inside and he's been covered by a sweeper because every team now is leaving a centre back or something back, you know, covering, yeah. being clever. You don't want loads of space in front of Hutchinson. Mm. So now you have a 2-on-1 in there. Mm. But out the field, Waterford have an extra man. Mm. Do you know what I mean? It's Waterford playing with one extra man in the engine area.
Yeah.
Whereas Galway are wasting 1-on-1. Whereas if Waterford played three inside, for example, you'd have one covering three. You can justify that.
Yeah.
But one covering one, it's a little bit of a, you know, it's like Waterford are up a man.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And where Waterford, you know, if Galway wanted to stop Waterford, you'd nearly be thinking, commit another man into the area where around this middle of the field where Waterford kind of have an extra man running through. And if you want, stifle it out, you know, physically kind of box them up. But they kind of didn't either. You know, they kind of just left it in between. And the fact that Desi Hutchinson was winning balls, again, this move as well of Doughty Burke out at centre back and Garrod back in Ernie, you know, I kind of can't understand it. I don't think it would have changed a whole lot. But Doughty Burke has been the best full back over the last 5 years, you know. And him out at centre back, he was getting on a lot of ball and he was hurling well, but I think his command at the edge of the box was a thing that would also help. The fact that if he's going to be a spare man maybe back there and directing backs around him, because he is the best full back in the country, and it's not just because of his hurling skill, it's because of what he's able to do talking to backs, and I think he would alleviate some of the problems there. But yeah, look, I think Waterford were having their cake and eating it, really, you know. They were benefiting big time. They were playing both games they wanted to do, and Galway didn't really know what they wanted to do.
Yeah, Waterford got 4 from play from their half back line and 5 from play from midfield.
Yeah.
That's huge.
Huge,
that's in an area where they have an extra man.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's really when you think it, like tactically, I think they were excellent there on that, to do something like that.
They were, yeah. And like, I would have marked Shane Bennett over the years. He was an out and out corner forward for years, and now he's at centre back and he's popping up with scores. Kieran Bennett the same, you know. Yeah. The three Bennetts were on the scoreboard in the first half.
Shane set the tone. His first point was sensational. He went to dummy it and brought it back and nearly got tripped up and stuck it over.
Yeah.
Like, because he was picked right half back for a league game, but he ended up playing full forward.
Yeah.
And then I saw the Waterford team and I saw him at centre back and Austin Gleeson at full forward and went, ah, well, there's the obvious switch.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah, but maybe Galway got a bit of a little shock from that.
And that's it. And I think as well, for teams going forward, if you were looking at the Waterford team and you did see Stephen Bennett, you don't know, or Shane Bennett. You didn't know whether he's going forward. Is he going to start? Because he might just as easily. They might put him up midfield or half forward. And then, so I think if you're going out with a plan to try and man-mark these lads or go, this is, you don't know what way they're going to set up, because they have so many lads who are probably traditionally forwards playing midfield and half back line, and they have the brain for scoring, they have the confidence for scoring as well. And Shane Bennett's point, like you said, that was a real forward score. That wasn't a back coming out with a ball. That was the confidence of a forward having a bit more space out the field. He'd be used to being boxed up a corner forward. Now he had a bit of space. He has the belief because he's used to scoring. So you have this launching pad now of him at centre back coming up through the middle, and if there's a score on, he's well able to take it. Yeah. So it's an interesting dynamic, and it's something, in fairness now, for Liam Cahill, that, you know, you have to give him great credit that he's gone with this, you know, because he's nearly almost taken out the traditional centre back and said, you know what, I'm going to put in another fellow who's capable of scoring there, fellow who's capable of running, and just a really good hurler. Instead of having him on the bench because we have 6 good forwards, throw him in there centre back, and It's worked out brilliant.
Yeah, it's worked out brilliant. Caelan Lyons, so we said, but there's not much more you can say about him. He's just a gazelle up and down the side of that. He doesn't get tired.
No, he doesn't get tired. And it's I'm looking at him, you're nearly getting annoyed looking at him. Because you're going, why aren't you getting tired? I'd be tired if I was doing what you were doing. But he just runs up, and nearly every time you're saying, how don't teams see this coming? Yeah. He just runs up the line, gets it over the bar, and he's back in position in 15, 30, 20 seconds.
And they're not wasted runs, because he's nearly always found. You know what I mean? Yeah. When he does go, they're always trying to find him. Like, I mean, we talked last week on the show, I think it was on Thursday, about Davy Fitz's record with Wexford, and we're trying to analyse, was it a good record or was it a bad record? He beat no Munster team, he beat Kilkenny twice, and you know, and like, he did draw with Galway and drew with Dublin and beat Dublin anyways. But like, I mean, you look at Liam Cahill in 2 years. Davy was in Wexford for 5 years. Liam Cahill in 2 years, coming off, I think it was 2 years without winning a championship match. It was some awful record in Munster. He's now beaten Galway, Kilkenny, Cork and Clare in 2 years.
Yeah.
It's phenomenal what that man's done with Waterford.
Yeah, he's done a great job, you know, and everybody's kind of talking about really realising what he's done. Do you know, we saw him on the sideline at the weekend as well, and he was on fire. You know, he was shouting at players, and it seemed to look like as well, it wasn't a case of, even when players were going well, he was still getting onto him, saying, like, you know, if they missed one ball, even though they'd hurled well for 15, 20 minutes, he was getting on to him and he was shouting, that's not good enough, you know. And he seems to have instilled a real fire into these lads. And when he took it over, look, a lot of lads were kind of saying, you know, there's lads moving on here, Pádraic Mahony, he's getting older, and these lads, and you know, you have Austin Gleeson, you have Tadhg De Burca, but who do you have around him? And he's brought in, like, I mean, Jack Fagan, he's brought him in from Meath, essentially, like, you know, and made one of the best half forwards in the country out of him. Caelum Lyons, I would have felt very hard done by for an all-star last year, but exploded onto the scene. Yeah. And he seems to have options all over the place, but I would put it down to Liam Callis created these options for himself. These were by no means givens. Like, I mean, Shane Bennett stepped away from the panel for a bit. Now he's back in, and it's like he was never away.
And he's played the 2 years without Pádraic O'Mahony and Tadhg De Burca for a lot of this year rather than 2 years. Like, I mean, they're two of the most important players for Waterford. He's never complained about it. He's got them on. He has them beaten Galway.
Yeah, he has them beaten Galway. Like, and if you look as well, Stephen Bennett.
He's transformed.
I don't think he even played. He was an unused sub in the All-Ireland final in 2017, wasn't it? Yeah. And, you know, he was an unused sub. And at the moment, if you were to talk of probably the top five, six forwards in the country of consistency, of free taking, he's an exceptional free taker. You know, he missed one, I think, at the weekend. But he very rarely misses. Pops up with big points and is a commanding role now at centre forward. He didn't play in the All-Ireland final a few years ago. So Liam Callis has kind of really looked at these players, looked at the raw material he has and went, where can I use these and where can I get the best out? And he is getting the best out of them, which is brilliant. And where he's pulled lads in from, again, Desi Hutchinson, a lad who's off playing soccer for a few years, saw what he's good at and is really using him really well. So Liam Callis deserves a lot of credit. And I think Tipperary, you know, in the next few years we'll be looking going, we need to get this fella back into Tipperary. By no means saying anything about Liam Sheedy, but, you know, in a few years, if Tipperary are looking for a manager, there's only one person they're looking for, it's Liam Cahill.
And impressively, he didn't clap Waterford in off the pitch at half-time.
Yeah, he took a note. That didn't go too well last
didn't work out too well, no.
No,
definitely not. Like, where do Galway go from here? Like, I mean, is this soft Galway back again? Like, I mean, the reality, like, well, I'll throw that to you. Is this the soft Galway back again?
I was disappointed in Galway. I'll be honest, I was delighted. I was about to put up I nearly put up a tweet before the games calling it, which is always a risky game to do. And I said I'd put down, I was expecting a Galway win and a Clare win, just and I think that's kind of a lot of what people are expecting. I expected Galway, after the Dublin performance, there'd be a sting in the tail, because I've been in that position with teams where you've went out and you were flat, like they weren't at the pitch of the game against Dublin, but you're busting for the next match going, geez, we're going to write this wrong now, and, like, you know, that we sold ourselves short in that match. So that's what I thought Galway were going to do. And I couldn't get over it. They just didn't. They were flatter again than they were against Dublin. And it's almost like they just said, they accepted that, oh, you know, we weren't in Leinster finals, so now we have a really long path to the All-Ireland final. I could be wrong, but it seemed to be the attitude, and that Shane O'Neill couldn't get the best out of them again. And they didn't seem to know what they were about the weekend at all. Yeah. So unfortunately for Galway, you know, the narrative over a few years would have been this thing which of, you know, is it Galway, you know, maybe shying away from the battle. They didn't for the last 10 minutes, but that's not good enough. It's 70 minutes of hurling you're looking to play. So unfortunately for Galway, I expected them to explode out of the traps and really put on a performance that we saw in the league, where they knew what they were about. They just seemed like the only team that would be able to put it up to Limerick. Yeah. And it's amazing, in the space of a few weeks, they look like a completely different team.
And Cannon gone completely off the boil, and he was making them tick a little bit, you know. Mm. Like, as the game changed for them, like, they won in All-Ireland, they were a long kind of ball team. Not, you know, modern long, but like, I mean, going long, big, you know, fetching half forward. Like, are they a bit slow for a Waterford, you know, or they a bit, they're good skill, but they're bigger, slower. Like, we talk a lot about Tipperary and when is that transition going to come?
Yeah.
Are Galway looking to be in that boat as well, where some of these lads need to be moved on? They need a three or four young, fast, Caelum Lyons type fellas to give them that energy.
Yeah, well, this is it. I suppose, first of all, Galway want to look at and say, well, what are we about? What do we want to play? Now, in fairness, they're joint league champions, so they hurled through a league performing really well, and it looked like the style they were playing was a good style.
That's a Walsh Cup league now.
But it was a summer league, really. Yeah. You know what I mean? They were playing during a summer where they were performing on dry. It wasn't a big boggy pitch they were playing on. So I was looking at it, and even we saw Cathal Mannion, you know, and, you know, like you said, Brian Concannon, they were flying it. I thought, this is the old Galway are in a great position here. So I don't think over the space of a few weeks they can just write off everything they have done. Whatever they were doing, it was going well for them. But whatever they transferred into the championship, they seem to now at the moment have one style of playing, and like you said, it's the long ball. But when it gets into Turles, and, you know, unfortunately for the likes of Conor Whelan, you know, Conor Whelan has performed well for them and got up with a few scores, but I don't think it's enough to have one player really consistently from play putting his hand up trying to get scores. And like you said, Waterford were flooding back as well. They have the legs to flood back. So if you are bombing balls down on top of Conor Whelan or whoever's in there, all Watford have to do is break it, and you have Jamie Barron back there picking up a ball, and which we saw at the weekend, he picked one ball up in his own box, picking up a ball, popping it out, and that long ball then becomes a dead ball. And now what do you do? So they need to have a plan B, and like you said, they have big physical players, but the problem with that is you have to carry that muscle around the pitch, like, you know, yeah, and you have to move. And
when the weather doesn't suit them, like, is that, would that be a reason why they're so flat?
It's hard to,
big men aren't going to get around the field, you know, in that kind of conditions.
It certainly is a factor, but I don't think it's enough of a factor to say that that's right, the only reason. You know, I mean, it's the same for Watford. Like, they have the same conditions to play under.
They're 11 stone like myself.
Well, are you able to cover that ground?
They're all young, but they all, look like, you know,
more suitable.
They're lighter team that looks like, I mean, Jamie Barron had run through the desert.
Yeah, yeah. Look, again, it certainly is more suitable to have players like that who are able to cover the ground, but look, I still go again, I don't think it's enough for Galway to hide behind that and say, oh, the weather didn't suit us and, you know, whatever. Like, at the end of the day, they reined in, 14, 15?
Yeah, late in the game, yeah.
So they showed they were able to do it, but it was just too late. I think it was more the guts of it. They just, when it was put up against them, they didn't really know what they wanted to do, and the fight wasn't there, and the fight came a bit too late, and that was it.
Yeah, that was probably. Liam Cahill said after the game, and he's probably right, he said the players showed great character, a team of lesser quality or heart could have easily gone under. And I'm thinking the 3 points after Jason Flynn's first goal to push it back out to six, and then when he got his second goal to get it to three, Stephen Bennett scored a screamer from the sideline to put four in it. Now, you know, the panic can relax slightly now there's four, you know, it's a goal and a point to draw it.
Yeah, and that's it. And, you know, it's nearly a thing at the moment while they're showing the replays. It was a great goal, but we missed the puck out nearly because of the goal. And they panned back to it, and it was just, I think he won, he caught it, you know, it was a long ball down, and he caught it and put it over from the sideline. Again, I think that shows what Watford are at the moment. It's not just a case of they're playing well, but then when it's put up against them, what do they do? They do have players at the moment who are putting hands up saying, I'll get a score. It was a very important score that Stephen Bennett got. And I think it just shows the mindset of the Watford players at the moment. They're up for the battle. And that's probably what we're talking about Galway, that Galway weren't up for the battle at the weekend. Watford are up for it. And it's a great sign. I think Watford could be, you know, pushing for an All-Ireland final position at this stage, because they're showing that even when it's put up against them, they're pushing back and they're saying, no problem. We have one, and we're still forgetting that they had one player, they were down a player at this stage, but they still stepped up and said, right, no excuses, get the ball over the bar. And they have players performing all over the pitch. So if I was a Watford fan at the moment, I'd be extremely proud of the Watford team at the weekend, even though the lead was reined in. They still turned around and said, right lads, we're still up by 3 or 4 points here, let's push it back out again. And so they did, even after the 2 Jason Flynn goals. So look at, when they needed to, they performed. And that's a great, I wouldn't be too concerned about losing the lead by that much. They had leaders when they needed them.
Last one on this, because we'll talk about Jason Flynn in performance of the weekend. The Cathal Mannion goal, is that a mistake by Sean O'Brien? Should he be stopping that? I know Mannion's great off his left hand side, but he's a good bit out there.
He was a good bit out. It just seemed that Cathal Mannion, he was caught a bit flat footed. Cathal Mannion struck it maybe a little earlier or maybe a little later than the keeper was expecting. So he just seemed to get caught unawares. It would be one that you'd expect him to stop, but I think Mannion was just clever in how he struck it. And he struck it low as well. Again, we're talking
about
this.
Hit the ground too.
Yeah, he struck it low, you know. So Mannion was clever with it. Mannion's a sweet striker of a ball as well. So in fairness to him, it was a 50-51. He could have got to it, but I think Mannion was very clever with how he struck it. It was the timing of it, I think he did. Like, he threw it up and just slapped it. Great strike of a ball, kept it low. Did all the things you'd ask a forward to do, you know, gave it a chance, and that's all you want him to
do. So maybe the goalie wasn't even expecting a shot there. It could have been a point expecting.
Yeah.
What about the other one? Cork 3-19, Clare 1-23. Is it fair to say the best team lost here?
In terms of
Cork have had 3 or 4 more goals and won it easier.
Well, I think Clare can be very critical of themselves. They hit a lot of wides. I think they had a dozen wides by the 50th minute, and there were these wides that I'd be snapping if I was on a team that were striking from the sideline off the back foot. Now, I'll say this: everyone bar Tony Kelly. I'll take Tony Kelly out of this equation, because Tony Kelly's allowed to do it. But it seemed to be that they were taking these shots where they were at the sideline and at a time where they needed to steady the ship a small bit, you know, at different times during the match. They seemed to take these shots that were a little bit, you know, if they're great if they go over, those ones, great if they go over. But if you hit them wide, Cork are going, brilliant lads, let them stay out there. You're not building any confidence by doing this. Let them stay out there, take these shots. So the fact that they had 12 wides, I don't know how many wides they finished up with in the end. I think it was up around the 16 mark. But you know, Clare can be very, you know, have to be critical of themselves there, that they could have won it because of that. Never mind Tony Kelly's heroics. But individually, Clare had a few more performances all over the pitch. I think it was nearly hard to pick out a Cork performance that was outstanding.
That was it, yeah. I was looking through performance at the weekend and I can't think of anyone other than Jack O'Connor. And he was wasteful with
goal
chances.
He was fleeting as well. There was times where he came into it and
couldn't
exploded.
Couldn't think of any Cork player that was outstanding.
No. And Seamus Harnedy, they still won. And maybe that's a sign of a good team, that they had a good overall team performance and they used the ball well and maybe were not as wasteful as Clare. But like the likes of Seamus Harnedy, it was the first time I kind of seen him in the last while of the old Seamus Harnedy that we would see that's electric and is capable of doing great things. And he stepped up. He stepped up big time because, again, he's been missing a few performances over the last few years. But he performed really well, which I thought was great to see for Cork. And Cork in general, they were just that bit steadier than Clare. Whatever shots they got, they used it really well. They seemed to be a small bit more composed on the ball. And maybe, again, it shows a bit better of a team performance that if they didn't have as many individual standout performances. But it is a strange one because it's very hard to pick out one fella that we thought was very good. Like Jack O'Connor was great and he got the few goals. I couldn't get over his pace, but then he was sent off as well.
He only got one goal. Like he could have got.
The next one went into the side net. It was the one goal he got. Yeah, but he, I think maybe 2 minutes afterwards, was back in on goal, and a great save out of Clare goalkeeper. But he stuck the next one into the side net and he came in from the left hand side and electric pace. But then I think it was maybe he got a flick or a Clare player got a flick on the ball. But he showed fleeting signs of it. But again, was in and out of the match. You know, got a ball, showed great speed. But then he was maybe missing for 5 or 10 minutes, you know. So very hard for a Cork team to pick out one outstanding performance.
His first goal, he burned Rory Hayes. And Hayes is a very fast player. I thought his main quality is that he's a speed demon himself. And Jack O'Connor took him go around the outside.
Yeah.
Now, he shouldn't be scoring a goal from there, should you? I saw John Conlon got across too late.
Yeah.
And the goal was already in there. Now, I know John Conlon was marking Kingston a lot more. He was doing a lot more marking than sweeping.
Yeah.
But at the same time, when Jack O'Connor got that ball, can't be a goal on there. The man goal side of him and him, you know, collected it out near the wing and then headed the long way around it.
The long way around, yeah. Yeah, you'd be expecting a flick. Maybe we're seeing the benefits of the penalty situation now. Maybe traditionally before, maybe he would have went in and just fouled him and pulled him down and got on with it. But in fairness, look, Jack O'Connor shortened up the grip and I think he knew the angle was tough. He kept it high. He kept the shot high and I think just whipped it at the goal and said, look, sure, it is a tough angle, but hit it high, put a small bit of curl on it there or something and give it a chance that the keeper mightn't get a hurl to it. And the fact he was so close to the keeper as well, you know, Patrick Collins didn't have much of a chance really there as well. It flashed by him. So like we said, similar enough to Tony Kelly, probably hitting it hip height and not giving it a chance. Jack O'Connor did the opposite. He struck it over head height at least and said, look, I'm going to try and roof this, give myself some sort of a chance. So look, it was a hard work goal. By no means was there a goal on when he took it on, but I think it shows what he's capable of doing, that he has savage speed.
Yeah. So Clare were 5 down, got it back to a draw. Clare were the better team in the second half, you'd say. But I don't know, the crowd got behind Clare and you were thinking, geez, you nearly start rooting for Clare at that stage because, they were come back and they were real, Tony Kelly was all over it. But then Cork did get 3 goals. Jack O'Connor missed 2 and Harnedy, like we said, hit it in the ground or got slightly hooked. It was a great goal chance. Cork could have had 6 goals.
They could have, They had the opportunities and Clare were a small bit flat at the back there at times. I thought, they were striking off the back foot a small bit, where we've seen Clare over the last few weeks of driving out with the ball. Now they've played a few weeks on the trot though as well, so it can be tough, but they seem to be a small bit off the pace or even a small bit off the pitch of the game at the start, and the backs were coming out, they were striking quite a few long balls as well, and they were striking balls from midfield, and Clare as a whole drifted in and out of the game, and like you said, you found yourself kind of rooting for Clare at times because they were doing quite heroic stuff, and Tony Kelly's heroics kind of felt you gravitate towards this kind of heroics and you're like, wouldn't this be brilliant, and you nearly want the fairy tale story to happen, whereas Cork were just kind of going through playing steady the whole way through, and like you said, they created 6 goal chances and could have really killed off the game a small bit more. So it's hard to say. On one side, you'd look and you'd think Clare were the better team. But then when you look in the balance,
it's hard to figure it out.
Cork probably just did a few things that small bit better, took their chances, created a few more chances. Okay, there was no one outstanding. But you'd rather win playing not great or looking great than lose playing fantastic, you know, yeah. or looking heroic.
Another way of looking, wasn't it, Cooney had a great chance to sub for Clare and then Barrett went down and scored, which was a huge swing in it. And then you take yeah. the Tony Kelly goal chance and there's two goal chances Clare missed as well. So, yeah, like, I mean, yeah. it's a tough one to analyse that game, who
it was, kind
of
yeah,
was,
yeah.
was going better in it. Like, I mean, obviously Cork had got more of an impact off the bench. In fairness, Clare don't have anything really off the bench, I don't think,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Cork have those options and they got 1-2 off the bench from Connolly and Barrett.
Yeah, they do, and that's the thing. They do have the few more options, and we're seeing it at the moment, the effectiveness of subs over the last few weeks, maybe again with the intensity of playing week on week and different things. But subs are huge, they're always important, but they're hugely important at the moment, that they can maybe, when you see a player just kind of weighing in a small bit on the pitch, the weather's getting to him, he's after bursting, you know, bursting the gut there for 40-50 minutes, to have those players to come on and that actually have an impact when they come onto the pitch. I mean, again, we talked about it with Wexford and Kilkenny in the Leinster semi-final. Wexford didn't use their bench a whole lot, whereas Kilkenny really used it. So I think in the match the weekend, Cork had those one or two players off, and it was like, you know, we're talking about it here, that it was very fine margins that Cork actually came out of this game with a win. So the fact that their subs played a role, and maybe Clare didn't have as much off the bench, and again, even the likes of Ian Galvin didn't have a great game, whereas he could, if he popped up with the same amount of scores that he initially started off with in the Tipperary match,
yeah.
it could have changed the game again. So Cork's bench, I think, you know, deserves a bit of credit here. They came on and they had the impact. So look, credit to Cork there. They do have the few more options there to bring off the bench.
The Barrett goal should have put it to bed, but it didn't, because Tony got that penalty and then should have won it, which is absolutely incredible. Brian Lowen said after the game, he said, we've got exceptional is the word here. He says, we've got exceptional guys there. As a supporter, when I was looking at them, you'd be very proud of them. They're exceptional guys. And when you go into work with them, you even have more regard for them. Really exceptional guys to do everything and produce big performances, which they generally do. I think Clare have a lot more supporters after this year than a lot of other years, because Lowen is a gentleman on the line. Yeah. Like, there's no messing out of him today. It's just congratulations to Cork, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
You have a team that, you know, have a good first 15. They're missing a few lads. The bench isn't great. And they're heroics in every game.
Yeah.
And they're guaranteed a performance out of them. They have a nice style about them. They're very easy to like.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
with a lot of the shit going on with Clare and, you know, their bad start to the league, you know, it's nice to see that, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, they're a very likeable team now at the moment as well, because they have there seems to be kind of no airs or graces about them. And considering where they started off this year, there was all this talk of turmoil in Clare. And I'd be quite sceptical of, you know, whatever's going on. I often say with county teams, it's always when you're not going great, I think stories get inflated a small bit, you know. But they had to deal with that, you know. And then they had the situation of losing against Antrim. They had the COVID cases, whether they were COVID cases or not. Then they had to deal with, you know, the Tipperary game. But at all times, I think Brian Lowen deserves a lot of credit as well, because he's weathered this storm. He's put John Conlon at centre back. He's produced really great performances. They've been brilliant to watch. But it's kind of galvanised them, really, if anything. No pun intended, because they have two Galvins in the team. But it's kind of galvanised them like that. They've really come out and stood up and performed really well. But when things went against them, they haven't bitched or moaned, or they haven't said anything. Brian Lowen has just said, look, that's the way it is. We move on. And they're not looking for sympathy. They're looking to just go, well, look, didn't work out for us. And because, I suppose, as well, Brian Lowen has this thing of being one of the greatest, if not the greatest, full back of all time, this heroic man. But seems to be quite humble. I don't know the man, but seems to be quite humble and just gets on with it. And I think some other managers might give out that these decisions went against us, but he doesn't seem to say that. And
he held it back well after the tip penalty, all right, in fairness to him.
I thought he
exploded that day.
He deserves savage credit, you know, because, I mean,
performance of the year, that
interview. Was performance restraint of the year was Brian Lowen. So look, they're great. It's no consolation to them, but they're a great team, very likable, and they had a great year, and fair play to them.
Exactly. Last word on Cork, because we haven't been too complimentary from Cork. Like, I mean, Kieran Kingston said before the game, there was a lot of uncertainty coming into it from our point of view, and we're apprehensive as to know how it would work. And, you know, one game is all they've had. Clare had three. You know, Clare, well battle hardened, a very good team.
Yeah.
And Cork came in and, like, handled them.
Yeah,
you know, and they're coming out of the game with very little credit. It's hard to understand, you know.
Yeah,
like, I mean, they've Dublin now. They're Dublin now in the next game. Like, they'll be well into the mix. And Croke Park would suit their style of play.
Yeah, that's it. And look, I suppose the thing we're looking at Cork going forward, when I was looking at the first half of Cork at the weekend, it was kind of this traditional Cork that we'd be used to seeing. They're playing with a bit of abandonment, and they were just going at it, and they were just saying, look, you know, we're going to play this game, we're going to go at it. We haven't had as many games, but they, you know, they played Limerick and, you know, they went hard at beating Limerick. Okay, Limerick were Limerick and they just pushed it out.
But in a way, when you saw what Limerick did to Tip, Cork,
yeah, exactly,
gave it to Limerick plenty in that game.
And there's no one talking about Cork at the moment. Now, they're going to be playing against Dublin. The one thing I think about Cork is that it's kind of easy for them to get up for Limerick and all this stuff. The one thing I'm saying, if they go in against Dublin here now and that they don't perform, they're capable of beating Dublin, doing a really good performance, but they're also capable of being, a thing we've seen with Cork over the last few years, is going in a small bit flat into the game, yeah, thinking that we've performed well in the last few games and we've beaten Clare. So if we go out and do the same thing now again and they come flat into the match, and Dublin will be up for Cork, you know. So
we just don't trust Cork yet.
We can't trust them yet. Yeah. That's the small thing. But they're capable now of, they're in a good position. You know, they got, you know, people would maybe look at Dublin, they're not the easier draw, but people would look and say maybe that's the better draw. But again, Dublin have four players to come back into the panel that they didn't have for the last day. So, look, Cork will want to perform well, Dublin will be up for it, but it's still, I think the jury's out on Cork at the moment, you know, which I think they'll be happy enough with it as well. They're coming in under the radar.
Yeah, no, they definitely are. Right, we'll leave it there and we'll come back with performance of the weekend. All right, performance of the weekend, Paul. And the first one is Jamie Barron. I'm tired. There's not much more we can say about Jamie Barron. Like, I mean, 4 points from play. The sidestep, he's so elusive. You can't tackle him because you can't get near him.
Yeah.
And his accuracy is often underrated, because when do you see him hitting a wide?
Yeah.
When he does get a chance.
Yeah,
and he's back helping the backs and he's linking everything. And it, you wonder, like, they had the flat performance against Clare.
Yeah.
Who was missing?
Yeah, and that's the thing. I had to laugh, actually. I watched the Sunday game last night and Derek McGrath did a small bit on Jamie Barron, and obviously he was being very complimentary. But one of the highlights, as you're saying, of an area to improve on, I think this shows how good he is. He showed a block of ground that Jamie Barron struck a ball for a point, and he showed a block of ground that he could have put it in front of Desi Hutchinson. But the ball he struck went over the bar. So he was saying, he went over the bar. So, I mean, if the worst thing you can say about a player is that he can improve his ball distribution, but the balls he's putting in are over the bar, that's a very good player, you know. But his energy is incredible. You know, I was talking to someone
his
from...
sidestep.
Yeah, his sidestep. He's very elusive. And he just has this extra yard that we always talk about. Even though, you know, he has great pacing, he's great things, he gets the ball and his head is up straight away, he knows who's in front of him, and he just creates this bit of space and he just runs with the head up, you know, hurls with the head up, has the ball, looking around constantly, and again, very selfless with the ball, always looks to, he links the play for Watford, he links the forwards and the backs, and he's always running and supporting, but he's like this N'Golo Kanté of something of hurling. He just covers ground. He picked up a ball in his own 6 yard in his own box at one stage. But he's also, you'd see him then up the far end in a minute's time, he's up supporting the corner forwards, getting the ball. And there's just no end to him. So he's an incredible player. Like, I mean, he's one of the best players this generation, there's no doubt about it. And like you said, great midfielder, pops up with his 4 points, big 4 points to pick up with. But he just kind of drifts through, gets the ball, puts it over the bar, not fist pumping, goes back out into the position.
Very unassuming, isn't
it? Very unassuming. And that's something sometimes players can not get the credit for, that they're not these marquee players because they're not doing these things of cutting sidelines over from 60 yards or fist pumping when they get a point. He just goes about his business and does everything exceptionally well. So, yeah, incredible player.
That's it, because I suppose he doesn't have the profile he deserves, really, because he is, for me, there's not another midfielder. He's 3 All-Stars.
Yeah, yeah.
He's been at the very top of his game for a long time now. Like, he needs to get more assuming.
Yeah, yeah. And
he's huge. Like, he's just the perfect midfielder.
He is. And he's played corner back and corner forward. Like, I've marked him a corner forward over the years.
I didn't remember that. When was that? I heard that during the match in the...
That he's played corner back.
Yeah.
They've just tried him there a few times. I think, like, between different management, they've kind of moved him around, because you see what kind of a player
he is.
Kind
of a manager will put Jamie Barron corner back.
Well, what's wrong with corner back? Only put bad lads corner back. But I think over the years, maybe when they've had a bit of confidence of where they're going to play players, to try and say, well, maybe we'll put him back here. I'd say he's the kind of player just performs well wherever you put him. But midfield is a funny position, that if you have a lad playing well at the backs, it's usually because he's catching high balls or he's coming out with these balls. Or if a lad's playing well in the forwards, he's getting scores or whatever. But if you're playing well at midfield, it's usually more so you're linking up with players and you're dropping back, you're picking up balls for the half back line, popping them off, and you're going supporting again. So it's a very unassuming role midfield. Yeah. Like, we had McFinlay doing it for years there, and a lot of it was breaking up play and getting a ball and popping it off. Jamie Barron does this really well. And I think if you're a neutral hurling follower and you just watch hurling, Jamie Barron isn't someone you pick up straight away. But if you're someone who watches hurling and you understand the importance of a midfielder who knows where to position himself, knows how to get back, pick up a ball, and then just use it really well. And it's not glamorous stuff. It's just popping it off and then running again, find the next pass, link another player up.
Yeah.
If you're a hurling person, you see it. But I suppose sometimes the marquee players are the players who translate over to people who don't really watch hurling. They watch hurling every so often and go, that's a great skill.
Yeah, yeah.
But the skill that Jamie Barron has of linking players up, it's probably one of the hardest skills in the game, to be able to position yourself around the pitch, know when to go, know when not to go, know when to sit back, know when to move. That's what he does, and probably the best person in the game to do it at the moment.
Yeah, no, he definitely is, and he's perfect for a running game to link all that, because that's what he's best at. Peter Hogan talking about midfielders, like, I mean, Jesus, he's definitely someone I've seen corner forward, but I haven't seen him play in a midfield. He had loads of energy. It looks like he loved it out there. Like, the Damien Hayes is the obvious one I think of when I think of that. Cha Fitzpatrick is another obvious one. This kind of transformation from a corner forward into a midfielder. Yeah. And a new lease of life and brains and, you know, great skill, or else you're not a corner forward if you don't have great skill. Yeah. I was surprised at his work rate and his energy.
Yeah, again, it's like you said, this new lease of life where you bring a player out, and obviously he has great skills, so obviously he was doing a great job at corner forward, but sometimes, you know, these players show signs of, like Cha, maybe the game changes and, you know, you bring a player out because they can get that small bit more room, even like the likes of Richie would have done it with us, plays in corner forward, but then you want to give him a bit more space and more importantly is capable of hurling, wants to give that bit of space. So yeah, he's again, and he's another fella who's unassuming again, like, you know, other players were maybe taking the headlines but got through a huge amount of play as well. So yeah, like, again, another revelation at midfield.
Yeah, no, he definitely was. Jason Flynn, he scored 2-1 in, brought on in the 57th minute. Now Jason Flynn is brilliant. So like, I mean, I'm sure you've marked Jason Flynn before.
Yeah.
How brilliant is he, and why is he not able to make a team? Like, I mean, I'll say it, it has to be in between his ears.
Yeah, I don't know. I've met Jason Flynn a few times. He's a really nice fella, and I've marked Jason Flynn a few times, and I think, you know, was it around 2015? I think he had a really good year because we played them in the final, and he was one of the fellas we were looking at going, because I think he was nominated for an All-Star. He might have won one that year, I can't remember, but he was flying it now that year. He has savage hurling in him and he's a great athlete. But I remember through the years, look, he's come on, maybe when he's younger, he's come off the bench and I would have been in cornerback and, you know, they might be taking off Damien Hayes or someone and bringing on Jason Flynn. You're going, oh, Jesus Christ, this is the fella they're bringing on.
Here's
another
problem, yeah.
Yeah, here's another problem. But what he's brilliant at is he makes these looping runs. You know, he's not a player that, he's capable of winning the ball out of the sky and brilliant to all these things. But what he's exceptional at is, a ball might land down at half forward and he makes a run out from corner forward and loops around and picks up the ball, and now he's looping around and he's kind of lost the defender. He's brilliant at that and creating space for himself. But sometimes, look, when he starts games, he doesn't seem to come into it too well. And unfortunately, he's in this position of, he reacts well when he comes off the bench. If there's, give him a compliment, he reacts well when he comes off the bench. But for a player who wants to start, that's not where you want to be. If a manager sees you as a player who reacts well coming off the bench and you throw you into a game when the game is opened up and you get 2-1, coming on at the 57th minute, you know, unfortunately you're putting yourself in a position there where that's the way a manager might see you. So look, Jason Flynn, he's capable of starting. He's a player I think Galway people would like to see starting a bit more, but I think he has to prove why he should be starting instead of coming off the bench a bit more.
Or do you think, like, sometimes I wonder about a player like him, like, I mean, you know, you're a sub a long time, then you start a game, there's a lot of pressure on him. Like, what if manager said to him, I'm giving you 3 games or I'm giving you the entire league this year. Yeah. I don't want you to put yourself up, because I think this is psychological. Whatever it is with Jason Flynn, when you get, and I'm not blaming managers, because when he does get a chance to start, he often doesn't do it.
Yeah, yeah.
But then he's dropped again.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, Jesus Christ, like, I mean, you know, put the arm around him, say, you're an exceptional hurler.
Yeah.
I want you as my number 14 and I'm going to give you every league game.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't feel under too much pressure now, you know. Yeah, play your way into the game. You don't have to do everything the first day, etc. You know, and talk him into it maybe. And I don't know, there has to be a way of getting the best out of this fella.
And that's the thing, and players tick differently. Like, for one player that might work, but for another player you might have to say to him, I'm not saying this is Jason Flynn, but for another player you might have to say to him, listen, you're getting 40 minutes, and condense the time down and say, at 40 minutes, unless you've given me a reason, you're coming off, and that's it. And that comes down to man management. You have to know what makes this player tick. Yeah, why does he come on and react? Is it because he's calling the manager a bollocks for not starting him? If that's what it is, well, then you know you're dealing
with... Put it up to him.
Yeah, you're dealing with a player that needs to be put it up to. Yeah, and you said to him, listen, you're better than this. Some other players, it's like the Liam Sheedy that we saw against Tipperary at the half-time, which match was it? The Clare match.
Yeah.
Where he put the arm around Noel McGrath, or he put the arm around Bubbles, and then he hit Seamus Callan in the chest. You have to know the players that you're dealing with. And maybe some players, are a bit timid, or some players, but you need to know that, okay, this is a player, suss him out and maybe put the pressure on him in a league match, and if he reacts to it, go, okay, he's reacted, that's what I have to do with this player.
Yeah.
So maybe put it up to him and say, listen, I'm giving you 40 minutes, give me a reason that you shouldn't come off after 40 minutes and you'll stay on, and let him build his confidence from there. Not saying that's Jason Flynn, but you certainly have to do something there with him.
Yeah, no, I get you. Like, I mean, Tony Kelly, we can't say any more about Tony Kelly, but like, I mean, I don't know. Like, there's an argument to be made that he's the best player that's ever played the game. When you look at everything he can do,
yeah.
And then you look at Patrick Horgan, you look at Joe Canning. Like, there's nobody as good as him in the game at the moment.
No, there's no one. He's like, I was thinking of it during the week. He's almost like a freelance hurler. You know, wherever you play him, he's the best at playing all over the pitch, yeah, in the country. And he just plays. He just runs off, and he's just galloping around the pitch. But what I was laughing at, and I'll actually tell you a story about Tony Kelly, was you'd forget he's 27. He seems like he's been around so long. And I saw someone put it up on Twitter during the week that, you know, he's 27, and everything has been said about Tony Kelly that needs to be said, but he was young hurler of the year, and he was hurler of the year when he was 19, I think it was, maybe, yeah, 18, probably 19. But he was on the All-Star trip in 2013. We went to Shanghai, and obviously it was full of Clare players because they had won the All-Ireland. But at that time, I remember thinking of Tony Kelly. You'd seen him on the pitch and you're thinking, this is a fair, strong man. But you'd forget he was 19 at the time, and he's 27 now. But we were in Shanghai at the time, and you know, you'd go and you do these few different things. You go to an Irish pub, and a fella from Carlow might have an Irish pub, and you go there, and you go on to the next place. And we're all having a great night, and we had a few drinks or whatever, and myself and Irla Tanyan and Cyril Donlan were sharing a taxi across Shanghai, and you know, everyone was looking around at the lights, and you were driving along, and a taxi passed us, and Tony Kelly was in the back seat, and we just looked across, and he was looking at the lights at Shanghai, and it was like a fellow who'd never been out to Clare before. He was like looking, and the gob was open on him, and we looked at him. He looked like a fellow who's about 15 years of age doing his junior cert or something.
Yeah.
But this was a fella that we were looking at going, he's the hurler of the year, and he's 19 years of age. And I remember there was kind of a silence in the taxi, and Cyril Donlan looked at him and said, Jesus Christ, that fella's 19, he's only a chap, you know. And we were thinking at the time, like, where is this fella going to go? And what I thought during the week was, if you put, no offence to Clare, but if you put him in the current Limerick team, I think it would only excel him even more again, because he's just exceptional. He is an exceptional talent. And to be honest, you're nearly tired of talking about him, because he's, what's more to say about him? I mean, he is the best all-around player, I think, at the moment in hurling.
Yeah, like we said, are we giving nobody from Cork a nomination here?
it's tough. Look, there's been great performances over the weekend, but it's tough for... There's no one
I don't think
overly
that,
stood out.
I don't think they'd be too worried. They're into the next round.
I don't think they're too worried about what we're saying about Cork at the moment. No, they're all right.
Okay, I'm going to give... PJ Scully from Leash scored 17 points, which, yeah, is absolutely incredible. I think it's, yeah, a record in the National League from a Leash player to score that. He scored sidelines, I think he got 4 from play.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, an excellent performance. Ross King got an outstanding goal, a great ball from Chad Dwyer, caught it into an empty net. He got 2 incredible points as well. They were just kind of 2 performances that stood out for me from Leash.
Yeah. Like, I mean, 17 points from PJ Scully, that's incredible to score, and regardless what way it came, but he chipped in, you know, to have a free taker putting balls over, but also he got a few from play. But 17 points for one contribution from one player, that's exceptional going. Ross King's goal again, yeah. What I really liked about it was, you know, he was going in, he had the Westmeath keeper coming out, and he had his man marker, but you could just see he kept his eye on the ball the whole way, and he kind of committed that, sure, look, if I'm going to get a clatter, I'll get a clatter, but I'll take a chance that the ball will fall in. And sure, by the time he landed, he was nearly in the net.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
So it was a great goal just because he did the basics so well with it. And like, this was actually, that was actually a great match, you know, and it was a pity that it wasn't more of it on the Sunday game, because Westmeath went ahead by, I think it was 6 points, and Leash ran them in. But their individual performances then, you know, the few lads that popped up with big scores. But yeah, no, PJ Scully, it was a great performance, and 17 points. A pity he didn't get more of a mention really on the Sunday game, but he won't be too disappointed with that. It was a great individual performance.
Yeah, no, it definitely was. Chad Dwyer was very good as well. Just from he deserves a mention. He got 3 from play and was kind of an all action as usual from him. The performance of the weekend has to go to Tony Kelly. It was between Tony Kelly and Jamie Barron, really, and Tony Kelly probably for the heroics. Just an incredible. Can you think of any player from any other county that can do what, like, I know Austin Gleeson is a talisman and he can score 4 from play, 5 from play. He's just, he'll get a point from a stand. I don't know how to describe it. Tony Kelly, the points he gets,
they're the
most inspirational points you could, they're like Rye of the Rovers points. And then the one that he wasn't sure, I think he was blown, O'Leary fouled him, and it was let the play go on.
Yeah.
And there was a pause for 3 or 4 seconds until the referee said, go on, we'll allow the advantage. And then he turned to the crowd and he gave. Like, he's got all that. He's got the most inspirational type of all action.
Yeah.
God, there's not much more you can say about
and,
it, is there?
And it's not a, what I like about it as well, it's not a bullshit inspirational stuff.
No,
like,
no, in, only
like
after
he turned to the crowd,
point.
It was a fist pump. And like, yeah. He had been outstanding for the whole game, so he deserved to be, you know, it wasn't the case that he was out of the game for half an hour, got a pint, and then was suddenly, you know, he was single-handedly at times keeping Clare in the game. And it was the fact that his attitude, that he didn't give up, like no more than for the sideline, that he played the whistle. And more than, even when the whistle was blown for the one with O'Leary, he still went and knocked over a pint and turned to the referee saying that was going over the bar. Yeah. It just, he was in a mind frame where he was just going, I'm going through a brick wall here now. And that's the way he kind of hurls. But again, even to look at him when he's playing, he just has this run about him, running around the pitch, savage energy, but he seems to just have a yard on two our players. And he gets a ball and he just has great belief that he's going to put this ball over the bar. And he has a great way about him. You know, he's very likable as well. So, and I don't think there's you'll go very far. I'd tell you, I wouldn't trust somebody who said they didn't like Tony Kelly. I'll put it that way.
There'd be something wrong with them, yeah. So I think that's Tony Kelly's 100th official performance of the weekend. It's really boring
this
given to a right, we'll leave it there, Paul. We'll be back on Thursday. We'll preview the two All Ireland quarterfinals and maybe do a bit on the Christie Ring as well. We'll talk to you then. Good luck.
No such thing as a media ban. We don't have a media ban.
Ah, you do?
No, we don't.
A donkey eat and a donkey eat a palace. There's nothing else to eat.
He was massive. Legs, ass, built, but I burst out laughing watching him.